Hear that? It's the sound of you catching up on all the latest and greatest fintech news, trends, and updates thanks to Streetworthy, Yield Street's bi-weekly newsletter. Stay in the know with CEO Milind Mahiri as he takes a closer look at what's happening in the fintech space, then breaks down what each story could mean for investors like you. Give your portfolio the edge it deserves and subscribe to Streetworthy on LinkedIn today.
Welcome to The Yield, the official podcast of Yield Street. Every week, we bring you the latest market insights across our asset classes and products from subject matter experts. Our aim is to break the outdated mold of investing and help you add financial fuel to your ambitions through innovative investing products and strategies typically unavailable to most investors. Realize your next level with The Yield. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The views you are about to hear do not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street. This podcast is intended to be strictly informational and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a research report, investment advice, or the offer or sale of securities or any investment product. Now, let's get into the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Yield. Make sure to subscribe to the show and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube, and leave a review if you're enjoying the content. In case we haven't met before, I'm your host, Peter Kerr. I'm the Director of Product Marketing here at Yieldtree. Today, I'm joined by J.R. Gondek, Partner and Managing Director of the Learner Group at Hightower, which provides an array of services that are tailored to meet each family's needs by taking a holistic family approach to wealth management. J.R., welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're excited to get going today. I think, you know, wealth planning and legacy planning is something that is very topical, I think, and on most people's minds. But perhaps to start, you could walk everyone through a little bit about your background and who the Learner Group is.
Yeah, sure. I grew up in northern Wisconsin and kind of continued south and then spent 20 years in Chicago. And 10 years of my career was at Morgan Stanley. And then the last 10 years kind of at Hightower on the independent side. And just I've seen a lot of the evolution of the business to kind of the old way, as I talk about it, versus kind of the new way and integrating a lot of the stuff you've seen. So today, our business started more of a stock picking practice. My founder is a professor and built that practice up. Sold it to Morgan Stanley in the late 2000s. And then we've just evolved with integrating everything that's needed for families going forward. So it's just been a fun evolution over the last 20 years.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think you had mentioned a lot of what the Learner Group does also is to provide a holistic set of services. So it's not just kind of the wealth management side, right? It's not just the choosing the right investments to reach any investment type goals or objectives. It's really also about how to plan for the future and plan for all scenarios.
Yeah, what we talk about is the wealth return. You know, everybody likes to focus on the investment return only, and it's nice to see that how much did I make or how much did I lose and track that. But the wealth return includes everything you're talking about, tax planning, between generation, how much is left in bloodline ultimately. So the wealth return includes all that. So we've really pivoted the last 10 years to really maximize wealth return for families.
And I'm just kind of curious, when you mentioned in the beginning, you all had, you know, essentially become part of a large wealth management institution in Morgan Stanley, certainly one of the largest broker-dealer wealth managers in the world. But it sounds like you all chose also to go the more independent route and work with a partner firm like Hightower. Maybe you could walk everyone through kind of, you know, how you made that decision, what some of the benefits are of being, you know, more independent.
And it's just the evolution of the industry. Like I said, when I started, I graduated college early, started at 21. So I just had my birthday this past week. So it's amazing 20 years can pass. But in it, going through the way it was, not that the old way was bad and the good way is better. I think it's just natural for progression as things evolve to take what you've learned in the past and make it better. So Morgan Stanley and the industry back when I started was much more transaction-based and definitely mail-to-mail dynamic, trying to sell this stock or trade this security and definitely one-on-one. And then seeing where the industry was going and the need for planning, because unfortunately, either clients pass away and it just wasn't optimal. A lot of money was lost between generation. Could see the need to really focus on kind of understanding estates and integrating that to kind of complete the overall process. So as we navigated the Hightower, it was a natural. So now we have a full-time estate planning attorney as part of our team. And it really just helps to kind of simplify things. Cause I think too many times in our industry, we try to communicate how complicated it is, how smart we are and how much we're needed to do things. And I've just found over the years that the simpler you can make things and bring everybody together, you get better results and kind of simplify the complicated and kind of put it all together.
And kind of just focusing for a little bit on something that you said, you know, around the wealth management side, but you mentioned how, you know, coming out of the 80s and 90s, it used to be so much around individual stock picking and really trading stocks, right? For which, you know, financial representatives were earned a commission essentially on the stock. But, you know, I think most of the industry has sort of evolved now, right, towards this kind of RIA slash fiduciary model, which tends to, you know, have more of an annual fee as opposed to anything transaction-based. Maybe you can walk everyone through, you know, why that transition has occurred and kind of how it aligns with interest with the end customer.
That's the model we've always operated, even at Morgan Stanley, was kind of the fee only, because it, at the end of the day, it aligns your interest, because we always talk about it. You don't want to sell you this because we make more money in the short run. It's really trying to keep the relationship and move things along, because I think the overall industry has tried to bring pricing down overall and more transparency. And I think that's a really good thing overall. But the simple fee, the transparency of things is really what people want and continue to demand, I think, ahead. And the fiduciary and fee-only model really helps to kind of preserve that overall.
Yeah. And you know, I know we were talking before the show about some of the big trends kind of in the industry. And I think one is, you know, around this idea of this generational wealth transfer, where you have a lot of folks who are, you know, unfortunately passing on or passing on their legacy and their wealth to generations either one or two levels below. I mean, certainly the overall aggregate amount of dollars is, you know, mind-boggling. But also, I think there's a lot to be said around, you know, how prepared some of the generations are who inheriting the wealth are to help manage, you know, that type of wealth. So maybe you could walk through some of those trends and dynamics that you're learning about.
Well, it's as you can imagine, like family planning evolves. Like the kind of the old way is you'll find out, you know, when I pass away as to what's in place. There's little to no communication. Families in general don't like to talk about money, and it's just and matriarch and patriarchs don't necessarily like to think about passing away and focusing on estate planning. So we've really tried to integrate the overall family, because what happens is if you don't get the next generation and the generation below that involved in the planning, it's just not done as well as it can be. So what we've really tried to do is you have typically pretty good planning at the matriarch patriarch level, but taking the next step to compare with the kids and make sure their planning coordinates, and then ultimately the grandkids, and make sure it all flows together, because you just find other challenges. So for example, if you have children, if you're going to save for your children, how do you know you're saving in the right vehicles? What if your parents or your grandparents already have something in place? If you're not communicating, you could be duplicating what's already done. So we tend to find stuff like that, but the more communication there is, and again, it doesn't have to share the dollars. It's more talking about the structure and legacy. So if you can set the money and the numbers aside and just really focus on making sure the overall plan coordinates, we've had a lot more success to kind of overcome sort of that legacy way of thinking of not communicating at all.
And why do you think there is such stigma around interfamily conversations around wealth?
Well, a lot of it comes down to, I think the matriarch patriarch level don't want to take the fire out of the belly per se of the next generation. If you know you're going to have a large inheritance, they don't, in general, the fear is that if you know about that, you won't be as motivated to work and have success in life. And what we tend to find is it's better if you proactively gift and communicate to get a little bit of wealth, because when the ultimate day and the amount of wealth you're talking about that transfers down in the future, the next generation needs to be prepared. And it's better to learn with smaller amounts along the way and make sure that it's integrated. That once you kind of work in families of that baby step logic, then they could see the benefits. They could see their kids or grandkids getting educated and better stewards of wealth. And then it naturally kind of flows even more efficiently.
And I'm kind of curious about that part, right? Because, you know, it's funny. I think when people think about when they need money the most, it's usually earlier on in life when their respective incomes are presumably lower. And maybe they have, you know, larger life events on the near-term horizon, like purchasing a home or maybe paying for education, which are, you know, significantly large, you know, bills to kind of incur. But at the same time, you know, the wealth transition doesn't necessarily mirror or match that, and kind of ends up being very lump sum at the end, when not always, but certainly there's a greater chance that people are less likely to kind of need it. So kind of curious, you know, how you all talk through that and also potentially try to solve it for it.
That's a big issue. So what we like to do is, is kind of build a financial plan as to what's the maximum amount you'll ever need, right? And then get comfortable to what that number is. Once you're very comfortable that I'll never need more than X dollars, then the amount above that you can discuss about starting to transfer. And then you're comfortable that you know your needs are met, that can start to transfer. And then depending, every family's different, right? You use the word trust and planning, and it's just that's complicated. It's unnecessary. It's only for the ultra wealthy. I mean, that's the general perception. But there's good ways to do that proactive planning to make sure assets stay in bloodline. And depending on your children, you can build in the protections if you think they need them, or you can kind of leave them as their own decision maker so that they can use the wealth as needed.
And to that point, you kind of mentioned, you know, trust, which I agree, kind of had this, you know, idea around them where only people that have really significant wealth need to consider them. But it seems as though you're kind of alluding to the fact that really trust can be beneficial for everyone. So maybe to start, you could walk everyone through kind of what is a trust and how it sort of currently exists and are utilized and maybe any other, and maybe we'll go from there on some other topics around it.
Well, the basic thing we talk about everybody needs is your basic will and trust, right? I mean, most people don't really think about it until your first child or your second child, or in my case, four kids. And then you get around to kind of thinking about that. So the will in general is more important when you have minor children. The trust really helps to spell out everything you want to either protect your children or specific ages, or you kind of to build out everything you want within the trust. And then the trust holds your assets. But again, it's from a basic standpoint, it's really no different than your personal account. You know, for the most part, your taxes are more or less the same. Obviously, there's more complicated versions. But in general, it really spells out what you need, because if life events occur and you're not prepared, there's just a lot more problems with probate and other issues that can complicate things. And then the money doesn't go where you necessarily want it to go if you're not prepared.
And with probate, it's essentially a situation where someone passes on and, you know, there's essentially a process to allow people to make claims on the assets. Whereas if the money was detailed either in a will or in a trust, there's a more immediate transfer of those assets. Is that kind of a fair way to talk about it?
Correct. And top of probate is public, so everybody can see what you have, right? And it's another concern around on that as well with privacy.
Good point as well. And then kind of, you know, on some of the more technical components of the trust, right? You know, who actually owns the assets and then who can kind of benefit them? So maybe you could walk through a little bit around the actual structure.
Yeah, the trust is typically controlled by the trustee. The trustee is the decision maker over that. The beneficiary could be you yourself, your children, other people, and you can kind of separate the decision maker and beneficiaries that way. A good example that we like to use are gift trusts for either kids or grandkids, because when you think about planning for your kids or grandkids' college or future needs, you know, there's a lot of options out there, whether it's a basic UTMA account or a 529 or gift trust. And the gift trust we just like for so many reasons, because you can either protect your children depending on what you're concerned about. And if you structure it properly, you can pay the taxes on behalf of your child or grandchild, which is, you kind of get that tax-free growth like a 529. But again, you just, especially when your kids are young, what if they get a scholarship? What if they don't go to college? The trust allows for that extra accumulation of wealth in the future if those events don't occur.
But so, you know, in that instance, right, and I'll make the example of, let's say someone is unknown, doesn't have great insight into what their future wealth might be. You know, how and when should they consider a trust? And then if they do decide to set up a trust, then, for example, they have the beneficiaries being their child, what type of recourse do they have? Are the assets kind of gone and they'll never have access to them in case something does go wrong in their life, or perhaps maybe their expectations for wealth growth, you know, aren't really achieved or maximized?
Well, there's probably a bunch of different scenarios there. If you're married versus single. So if you're single, trusts can ultimately act a little bit as a prenup agreement as well. So it allows you to kind of keep assets separate. So there might be a reason to set up a trust, even if you're single before you get married, for those types of reasons. And if you're married at a certain asset level as you're beginning, I think the gift trust for your children is probably more important, because as you're commingling with joint assets, there's plenty of time to kind of get your trusts in planning in order. But it's more, we find it more important to make sure that you're communicating either to your parents or your grandparents or down a generation. That's really the more important, because if there are trusts already set up in place, either up a generation or down a generation, that's what you need to be aware of to kind of ultimately answer the timing on some of those as well.
Very cool. And then, you know, when you all are working with your clients and you're starting to bring in the younger generations to the kind of the wealth planning conversations, what are some of the dynamics that people should think about? You know, how do you all navigate, you know, the complexities of kind of a family relationship and those dynamics?
We like to, I don't think you can ever start too early. So personally, I like, even with my children, 4, 5, 6 years old, right? Just get in generally thinking about it, because I think the educational system fails from a financial planning or personal finance, and families just aren't good about talking about money. So I think it's good to start with your children early to navigate and think about those kinds of things, because it's just a big issue that you kind of go through college and then you're left to just figure things out on the go, right? It just isn't really a good base for people.
And then are you finding with those younger generations that they have, you know, much financial literacy, or is much of this, you know, new to them for the first time? And so it really is kind of a long process to educate them.
It's from all walks of life, but in general, you tend to find there just isn't a very good base, right? And a lot of times it's like, I wish my parents would have helped me through this, or I wish, right, I'm falling behind on that. And the nice thing is, a lot of times if you work with the overall family, it's really just starting with, here's where you are. Make sure you're maxing out your 401k, as you just understanding the terminology of where things are. And then we just like to set goals. Like, you're just starting working today. Here's what you need to do to get to 1 million. Here's what you need to get to 2 million. Maybe your ultimate number is 5 million and want to retire. Here's where things are. And then you're tracking along the way. So you really stay away from the emotional side of the short-term volatility and really focus on the long-term plan.
And do you think that the younger generations are more likely to kind of be, let's say, spenders versus savers, or maybe how that kind of different, there's kind of differences among different generations?
Yeah, I think it's natural for the older generation to look at the next generation and say they're spenders, right? And whenever it is, I think it's normal. But I do think even since the pandemic, I think that the shifting thinking of saving every last penny versus kind of a better balance between enjoying life and enjoying wealth a little bit sooner, I think it's changed, because we've had so many conversations with people either retiring earlier or thinking a little bit differently on that. So I think the next generation just continues to go with that. I mean, and it'll always be that perception from the older generation that the younger spends too much.
Oh, very interesting. And then, you know, when you think about, you know, communicating and building some of these wealth strategies and portfolios, how does it kind of work within the dynamic as far as the different generations and what input they have on the portfolio? And I'm guess, you know, what I'm kind of getting at is, how much are you getting told on a daily basis that you need more crypto because the younger generation is pushing for some change in the portfolio construction?
Well, one other thing, when you get the communication that we found is we talk about intentional inclusive communication, where you want to include both spouses in conversations. And then from an advisor team, our team is over half women, over 20. And I just find it's important to listen to all viewpoints. I don't care if it's family planning, business planning, you name it. It's better when you take all points of view and you get better results. And I definitely find that with family planning around those kinds of things. And as far as crypto and those kinds of things, like, I'd say a year ago this time, it was still, people were hesitant, but it's just been a major shift in the last year of people seeing more of the practical uses that have evolved now, like the Super Bowl. I mean, there's going to be an NFT for each ticket, right? And there's going to be tons of advertising around that. So I think it continues to evolve as far as a need to want. And then on top of it, a lot of people have crypto. So it's really, and we've had a lot of clients with substantial stakes on certain things. And the number one thing we worry about is the planning around it, because in general, you hurry up and open a personal account on one of these apps or wallets, but you don't think about all the ramifications from your estate and tax planning and everything else that goes with it.
No, very interesting. And you did mention, you know, sort of the dynamic in your team, you know, is kind of structured fairly balanced between men and women. You know, have you seen a change in you know the matriarch's participation in wealth planning maybe over the last decade or so that kind of is different versus what it historically was?
Well, I think as advisors, the more we don't focus on the numbers only and, you know, talk about the economy and how, like, it's just not interesting to a lot of people. Like, they want to know, in general, are you okay? You start to talk about certain things, which is why I think the old way of is male to male was more the mindset. the new way is really, I'd like to talk about simplifying things. I mean, if it's interesting, you can always go into more detail, but in general, the wealth return and focusing on the planning, it just includes more viewpoints, and naturally the conversation is more comfortable for everyone to participate. So it's less about how much money do we have or make versus how do we plan around this, and the planning aspects and the generational planning really just helps to include. And then from a male, female advisor point of view is we all hear things differently. So you could sit in a meeting and I might've heard something and then somebody might've heard differently, and just men and women are different. So as you recap and do the planning, by listening to viewpoints and how we interact differently, you just end up with better results overall.
Very interesting. And you kind of mentioned about conversations evolving beyond just the wealth side. And you certainly mentioned a lot about, you know, family planning, legacy planning. And I'm kind of curious, you know, how else does your team participate in? What other types of interest do you see that a lot of these clients have, particularly around foundations, charitable gifting, and what other kind of, you know, less financial based planning do you all help out with? And what sort of trends are you seeing overall?
Yeah, we'd like to do a lot of legacy planning. So, and legacy can mean different things to different families. It could be a charitable intent. It could be, you know, just a lot of times we just like to share stories. I think a lot of times as a family, you don't necessarily share your successes or failures along the way. And it's good to share those from a legacy planning standpoint overall, we find. And then it just helps to create more family buy-in long-term of kind of appreciating the wealth ultimately, or knowing where it came from, a lot of those things. And then the planning around it, like I said, if it's a charitable intent, is building kind of the vision or mission around those, and then creating the investment strategy if that's needed. And that really just helps to educate a little bit more, but then kind of pass along that legacy that a lot of families are concerned about.
And then, you know, for those maybe that aren't quite yet ready to engage with a professional, are there any kind of rules of thumbs that you try to help guide people to as far as how to think about, you know, creating a sustainable lifestyle based on, you know, at least their current and projected assets?
Well, my number one piece of advice I usually give is go out and lose money, right? Which is like, why? Right. And I think if you go out and lose money, you learn. Do it with a little bit of money, but I think it's the best way to figure out, you know, what you got wrong or what happened. Because one of the concerns I personally have with kind of the last 2 years, either the crypto boom or some of the meme stock things, is if you kind of go out and have the opposite effect where you get this huge windfall or huge success out of the gate of investing, it can create the more of a gambling type mentality. I think that it's easy. It's easy to make money. It's easy to plan around that. And it's just not. I mean, people can get lucky and it's those kinds of things, but I think it's mindful that if you can learn in the beginning with a little bit of money, then you can understand how difficult it is and how important it is to stay on that plan and kind of integrate things. So go out and lose a little bit of money and learn from it. Like, I think that's one of the best pieces of advice.
And then anything else in terms of, like, you know, how to think about the right amounts to save? You know, if there's a rule of thumb that you have versus, you know, to your point about enjoying, whether it's wealth or just, you know, monthly income, you know, how to think about, you know, how you kind of how to grow your wealth and of course save over time to protect yourself, but also, you know, do enjoy what you have while you have it.
You know, a lot of rules of thumb we like are like usually 6 to 9 months of spent monthly spending and savings. Once you have above that, you should be looking at investments. You should be targeting maxing out your 401ks and building all those out. And then you want to prioritize the goals of your lifestyle. Do you think you'll spend more or less, or do you want to spend more or less? And once you kind of solve for those, then you can really build those goals. I need to save $2,000 a month or $1,000 or $10,000 a month, and project those out is the best way we find. But it's just important to identify the goals of what you want and really stick to that plan.
Very cool. We did have two technical questions come in around the trust conversation. So I do want to make sure that we hit on those. One was around when, and I think you sort of alluded to it earlier, but, you know, are there other instances where, again, even if you're not ultra wealthy, that trust can be utilized? And you certainly mentioned, you know, the gift trust, but are there any other use cases that anyone else should consider? And also just anything around what it's, you know, what type of startup cost people might be looking at to get a trust going or even a gift trust?
Each state is different too. So you got to be aware of individual state rules around depending on which state you live in. So that there's advantages around different things, I'd say. And in some states, you might consider a joint trust versus just a personal trust. And again, the complexity on some of this can get to the next level. But from the basic standpoint, those are other things to consider.
The other question was just kind of around, very technical question. Does a gift trust cause a gift tax for the trustees?
As my internal Wayne on our team, our attorney, likes, it depends.
Okay. Right?
And it's just that depending on how you structure it and do things, it can. But if you're kind of on it, and this is where you want to make sure you check in with your lawyer and everything to make sure it's done. And from a cost standpoint of getting things set up, you know, a lot of these you can do basic ones. And nice thing is if you're setting up your own estate plan from one of the online or cheaper routes, nice thing is you can always alter these. So they're revocable. So even what you decide today, amendments are very common. And a lot of times they're just one or two page changes to make things or update things as life events occur too.
Very cool. And JR, we're always looking to help everyone find those resources. So how can people find you and any other resources that you have available for listeners?
On social media. So Learner Group at LinkedIn or JR Gondek at LinkedIn, our website, Hightower Learner Group, and Instagram and other avenues like that.
Very cool. And any parting thoughts from you?
I just stay disciplined. I mean, the market's going to near term be a little bit volatile, but I think as you don't overthink it, stick to your plan. I mean, and more importantly, communicate as a family.
Very cool. Well, we want to thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you, of course, to all of our listeners as well. Remember to visit yieldtreat.com to learn more about our offerings and come to realize your next level with us. And of course, subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show. Thank you again and see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Yield. For the latest updates on the alternative investing space, go to yieldstreet.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. If you enjoyed the show, feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, as this will help other investors like yourself find our show. If you have any questions, please visit us at yieldstreet.com. Thanks again for listening and see you next week. The Yield Street podcast you just heard only reflects the opinions of the host, who is an associated person of Yield Street, and does not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street or any of its affiliates or other associates. The podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security, and is not an offer or sale of any securities or investment product. The podcast is also not a research report and is not intended to be and should not be construed as investment advice.
Support for this podcast comes from Yield Street. Trying to time the stock market can lead to regret. At Yield Street, our alternative investments are designed to create predictable secondary income streams, providing you with tools to help put your money to work immediately. These investments in asset classes like art, real estate, and legal finance typically have low correlation with the stock market and target annual yields up to 7 to 10%. Welcome to the next generation of investing. Welcome to Yield Street. Sign up today at yieldstreet.com.